to the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I have Matt Moore whispering into our ears thoughtfully. Matt, how are you doing?
I don't know how to respond.
My goal is just to make it as awkward for you as possible.
And you have succeeded. I just started thinking immediately of like, I'm doing well. Big night games last night, lots of stuff to talk about. And you know what, Ed, though, I gotta say, I am so excited for Thanksgiving. I get more excited for holidays as I get older. My wife's really into the holidays. And used to be I was kind of like, oh, it's fine. And then I would, you know, kind of get excited for Thanksgiving on the day of. But now I'm like excited for everything. I'm even going to my in-laws that I'm excited about. My in-laws are great, but they live in the middle of nowhere. I'm even still excited about it. Like, I'm going to watch the parade. I'm not going to have to watch basketball. I love watching basketball. It's nice to have a day off.
It is.
You know, I'm super excited about everything regarding the meal. I'm going to take a big, big, long nap. It's going to be amazing.
Here are my plans for that day. I'm going to get up. I'm getting up at 6 a.m. to go play basketball at 7 a.m.
Way to make me feel bad, jackass.
No. And then after that, I'm going to eat so much food and just put myself into a food coma the rest of the day that will make me completely forget that I tried to be healthy for even an hour on Thanksgiving. I'm gonna try to watch football, but I'm probably just going to fall asleep the whole time. I am so excited about this.
See, I'm going to work out, but my brother-in-law is coming into town on Wednesday night. He's staying with me while my wife's at my in-laws, and we're going over on Thursday morning. And he and I are inevitably going to go through like 3 bottles of wine.
Yeah.
Which is great because there's like 35 NBA games on that night, so there shouldn't be a problem.
there are only 28 teams playing.
So if I accidentally report that someone has gotten injured who hasn't, just disregard that.
It's just going to be, you know, Tristan Thompson just looks hurt. That's all. There's two of them. There's twins.
Accidentally reported the Wizards or the Jets now. Tim Tebow scored 25 points. So that's going to happen. So, like, I would, you know, typically plan to work out. But the other problem is my brother-in-law is a CrossFit instructor.
Oh.
So, like, if you start to work out with him, there's, like, this whole pressure to, like, he knows, like, I can't keep up with him. And he never tries to do that. He just tries to, you know, help me do something that's productive and actually get something out of my workout. But I know that's not going to work. And plus, I'll probably be hungover. So I know that's not going to happen. So I'm pretty much just going to, like, wake up in a daze, slowly transfer over to the house, and then pretty much zone out and watch football and the parade all day.
Here's the thing about the parade, is that I never know if I'm supposed to be impressed by what I'm seeing, if I'm supposed to, like, just completely make fun of it, if I'm supposed to, like, be in a reverent kind of mood to really, like, appreciate the day. Like, everyone's like, oh, you should just be thankful for what you have, and I'm thankful for the ability to make fun of things I shouldn't make fun of.
I think it's fine to make fun of the parade. For me, you know how the Princess Bride, it's still awesome, but there are ways in which as you get older, once you hit about 25, it loses a lot of what it brought you before you were 25?
Absolutely not. I love that movie more than I ever have.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I've just seen it so much at this point that I'm unable to really be enthralled by it. There are parts of it, like the Billy Crystal part hangs up for me, and Much of the second act actually holds up, but I'm to the point now where even I am not left-handed just doesn't get me like, whoa, anymore.
Billy Crystal made fun of the Fast and the Furious franchise on Twitter months ago, and he's been dead to me ever since. Yeah, because it's one thing if you want to knock those, but if you made City Slickers 2 and you're knocking bad sequels, I have no room for your opinion.
What team is the City Slickers 2 of the NBA?
Is it the Celtics? The majority of the parts are still there.
Maybe it's the Wizards because like John Wall and Nene are Jack Palance.
Yeah, and that makes... Does that make Jordan Crawford the snake poison? Or is that Trevor Ariza?
New nickname. I said this morning I'm really mad at Wizards fans because like Mike Prada and Michael Lee, who covers the Washington Post, covers the Wizards for the Washington Post, they kind of talked me into Ariza and Okafor having been good pickups, like that trade was a good idea. And now I'm like, why did I fall for this? And like Dan Devine at Yahoo's like, you just overthought it, man. It happens to the best of us. And I'm like, you know, and it's, I feel bad for Wizards fans too, because they're in the zone where they're like, yeah, but if we had the name Wall, and it's like, you don't know. I mean, you could be just as terrible. You just don't know. And you don't know when you're getting the name back. Like, Wall will probably come back. You have no idea of the name.
I have no problem with, I still don't dislike the trade. I mean, the problem is Trevor Ariza gets put in these situations where they think, they let him think that he should touch a basketball on offense.
Right.
Which is, there's just so much evidence against that. And I get that, you know, he had a great playoffs once. That's fine. That was like 4 years ago.
I said yesterday that the amazing thing about the NBA is not that Bynum hurt himself bowling. It's that Bynum hurt himself bowling and none of us are surprised by it. Like, that's just what happened in the NBA. Similarly, the amazing part about the NBA is not that Trevor Ariza got like a bazillion-dollar deal off of what really amounted to 12 seconds in an NBA conference final series. It's that he did it, and that makes total sense. Like, of course he got $12 million for getting two steals against the Nuggets. Like, who's surprised, really?
He just sucks so much. And I don't even know that he's good on defense anymore. He could be. It's just, with him, you know, I think that there are these physical similarities to Tracy McGrady, and you just see a very long, lanky wing player, and you think, hey, that guy should be creating on offense. And we saw the same things with Gerald Green. Now, not to the same extreme, like he's actually a decent scorer, but you just see these long, lanky wing players, and people just get caught up in this idea of, well, if they add this to his game, if he adds this to his game, he could be the next Tracy McGrady. Tracy McGrady was a freak of a player and a complete anomaly, and that just doesn't get replicated that much in the NBA. And so for some reason, Trevor Ariza has gotten caught into this because of his physical attributes. And really, I don't know why you would play him over Jan Vesely or Chris Singleton at any point. And this is the problem with the Wizards. Those are the only options.
He is in the 20th percentile on defense right now.
That sounds low.
That does sound low because it is low. That's very low. It's just rough. It's just, you know, it's rough. And I feel bad for Wizards fans. And I feel bad for Kings fans, but, you know.
And I actually do like the trade in the sense that you can keep saying, oh, we've got trade we've got cap space to trade with. We've got cap space to sign guys with. But your crappy team isn't attracting guys. So you kind of need to bring in veterans. And I think it was 2 years on each contract that they brought in. So you kind of forego cap space for 2 years. That's not that bad. They become expirings after one, and you can use them to move for different players. I think it still gives you plenty of options to work with, and you brought in veterans to try to help John Wall. Problem is John Wall isn't back, Nene isn't back, and without those two, that team probably still isn't very good with them, but they're certainly atrocious without them.
But here's kind of the problem I have, when you get into these organizational problems where it's bad from top to bottom when the whole thing is infected with snake poison, you have the issue of, you know, they can get rid of the contracts of this year, or like those guys can opt out and then Grunfeld can pay them. Like, that's the concern that I have is...
Sure.
Like, you ever have that friend that is completely irresponsible and tells you one day, like, I'm thinking about getting a dog, and you're like, you cannot get a dog. Like, under no circumstances can you be responsible for another living thing. Like, don't even get a plant. That's how I feel about the Wizards with contracts, where I'm like, do not put yourself in a position where you can overpay someone.
That's weird. I had no idea you had met every single friend I have. It's weird. My lady friend will say something completely mature and responsible, and I'm like, I have no idea how to deal with this. You've already figured life out. Like, how do I correct this? There's nothing to correct. I would just love to get, you know, Ted Leonsis and Ernie Grunfeld in the same room with R.C. Buford and Peter Holt.
Right, no, you cannot, do not trade for that contract, no, like, that's not okay. He needs a parent. Ernie Grunfeld needs a parent. That's what he needs.
Ted Leonsis and Zach Leonsis, don't they run the Wizards? There's a parent situation.
So in other news.
How are you feeling about, I guess about the Grizzlies after last night? Did that change anything for you? They lose to the Nuggets by 5. A really good game. Gallo finally had a good game. You know, not really the dominant defensive performance that we've been seeing from the Grizzlies so far.
It was a weird game. You know, I of course, like, wrote about how the, I wrote this the email yesterday on why the Nuggets suck, and like wrote this, like, I basically poured out everything that's been in my brain about them and their offense under 1,500 words, and then they go out and they didn't necessarily. The thing is, like, they didn't. There were still a ton of mistakes down the stretch. Like, they were still doing it. Like, Ty Lawson.
Yeah, he looks bad at the end of games.
He looks bad the whole way through. Like,
well, that's true.
Why isn't he shooting? Like, it kills me. I we're back to the brick thing. I want to throw a brick at him every time he passes up that 3-point shot. It's not because I'm rooting for the Nuggets. I'm rooting for the Grizzlies last night. But, like, I was just, I was, my mind continues to be blown by the fact that Lawson won't take that three. Because I'm like, you're a 40% 3-point shooter. You have a look. This team needs a three. You need to space the full floor. Take the shot. And nope, he runs into traffic and gets it blocked again. I'm just like, what are you doing? Now, he did make a great driving kick out to Gallo, and that's how it should go. And Gallo last night, like, that was the good news. Is Gallo was finally like, all right, fine. I'm shooting. Cool. Like, whatever. I'm just going to go ahead and shoot. And that's what they need to do.
Yeah, like, he got to the free throw line 11 times, which is exactly what you want to see from him.
Yeah. Like, the best thing, like the best things about the Nuggets right now are... Well, I don't even want to say right now because Gallo's been inconsistent, but from, I guess, overall this season have been Iguodala's playmaking, Iguodala's defense, Gallo's scoring when he's on, and JaVale McGee. Like, that's been the best things about it. And yeah. Kenneth Faried's energy. It's hard because I like Kenneth Faried a whole lot. I just am aware of how young he is. Yeah. Like, that's what gets people confused is when I'm like, well, Faried makes a lot of these mistakes, and they're like, you're a hater. I'm like, no. Like, I think Faried's terrific. I think he's fantastic. I think this team needs him, and I think he gives them a lot. But I see more of the missed rotations, the bad fouls, the missed tip-ins, the getting his shot blocked. I see all of those in addition to the great play he makes at the end. So it's like, he'll make, and I've said this, I've joked about this before, he'll make like 9 bad plays and 10 great plays in one possession.
Yeah.
You know, and that still means that he's making one great play, which is more than a lot of players make. But it's just... You know, I can't help but see those things that happen a lot. So they have things going for them. You know, Carl said from the beginning that they just want to make it to January 1st 500. That's all they care about.
Yeah.
Like, if they are 500 on January 1st, he'll be happy. And they have a good shot at it. You know, that as bad as they've been, you know, they've got a decent enough shot. And part of it, like, I wrote about this yesterday in the third part of the whole feature on them, which is like. They have like the 15th ranked strength of schedule. But when I look at it, you know, they lost to the Sixers on an emotional home opener. They lost the Magic in an emotional home opener, and they played Miami twice.
Yeah,
like that's 4 of their 6 losses. The Spurs loss was bad, but it's in San Antonio, and the Spurs were coming off a loss and pissed off. And then you've got the Suns loss was the only one I really point to and go, that's a really bad loss. You know.
And they've already played 8 home or 8 away games.
Mm-hmm. They play a quarter. Aaron Lopez of Nuggets.com shared this the other day. They play a quarter of their away games before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Like, yeah. I have no idea what the NBA, like, what the Nuggets did to the NBA. I don't know, like, who hurt you, NBA? Who hurt you? Like,
one play I wanted to talk about real quick is there was a play toward, like, pretty much I think in the last minute or last 2 minutes where Rudy Gay got the ball on the right wing, kind of around the right elbow area, and had Iggy guarding him. And we've seen a lot better defense from Iguodala, but it was just complete shutdown. Like, Rudy Gay had absolutely nowhere to go. Tried to move right, tried to move left, tried to pump fake. Iggy didn't fall for any of it, and he just threw up a horrendous shot. And it was just that it was that thing where Iguodala gets to lock in on defense, and you actually feel bad for the offensive player because there's nothing he can do. He can get rid of the ball, or he can throw up a bad shot.
The areas in which Iguodala can get beat with speed, he has the size to cover for, and the areas which he can get beat with strength, he has the size to cover for, and the areas in which, like, he would just be overpowered physically, he's fast enough to deter. Like, that's, like, and that was one of the things that I think kind of surprised me is I had to watch him in practice to really see it. The first day I went in for Nuggets practice, I saw, like, actually, like, what he looks like up close.
Yeah.
To see him physically when he's defending, and you're just like, he is a monster.
Yeah.
Like, Kevin Durant is super tall. Iguodala is just a monster. Like, it's not LeBron, but there's nothing like LeBron. But right. I mean, physically, it's just really impressive. Gay, I was saying this last night, I don't really have a good feeling for how Rudy Gay's season is going. Like, his numbers, and it's I can't wait for Rudy Gay's having a career season because his, like, points are up. And it's like, yeah, but his usage is up and his shot attempt, like, he's just shooting more. Like, that's it. Like,
yeah.
I think he's shooting less. He's got a pretty bad true shooting percentage. His assists are up, but his rebounds are right about where he's been at. Like, he hasn't made any sort of huge jump, so it's kind of weird to, like, but yeah, I see him, and I see him making a lot of really big plays, and that's one where I'm really trying to understand it, because, like, I don't feel like he's played as badly as the numbers kind of suggest he has, but I can't really tell. I'm having a hard time trying to figure it out.
You know what's hard to figure out?
What's hard to figure out, Zach?
It's hard to figure out how the Charlotte Bobcats have stolen my heart.
Those kiddies, man.
I love this team. I've even watching, like, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is just forcing stuff on offense last night, and it wasn't, like, he had no plan. He was just, I'm going to get into the middle, and I'm going to see what happens. And for the most part, he just got blocked, or he got stripped, or it threw up a bad shot. But the amount of effort he puts into these plays, I think, is very representative of how the organization has done pretty much a complete 180 from last year, and Mike Dunlap has kind of changed. I don't know that he's a good coach. I don't know that he's going to be a good long-term coach, but he can get guys to just fight. I mean, they were down 11 halfway through, or a little over 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter last night. I think they went on a 21-7 run to end the game, just because they didn't really think they were going to lose the game. I mean, they just kept fighting, and that's not something you saw from them last year, and they have more talent than they did last year, but it's also just a complete change in what the organization and what the roster kind of believes in.
And it's really good because they're having wins, and they need it. I mean, it's important that this keeps happening, because when you're going to ask as much as Dunlap has with the kind of practices they've had, you better pay off.
Like, yeah, you're seeing results.
Yeah, and if you don't, that's, you know, the players will bail because they're pros and they're not going to put up with it. But as long as it's working, like, they'll buy in and they'll really commit to this. And you know, you talked about how, like, you know, they don't really have a plan; they're just kind of attacking. That's the Bobcats' offense in general. I think that's why it's so much fun to watch. Is like, they don't really seem to know what they're doing. They're just kind of like, just go.
Yeah, and they're like isolating Byron Mullins on the wing, and I'm thinking, what are you doing? This doesn't make any sense. And then it's kind of working. In 19 points on 14 shots last night.
Byron Mullins had a good year last year. Like, everyone kind of lost sight of a lot of that. Like, he's a fine player. He's not great. He's okay. He's serviceable. He fits. It's okay. Like, you know, he's not this awful guy that he was a couple of years ago. I mean, and I think it's a huge testament to the Thunder's development program. But yeah, I mean, like 19% of I'm looking at Synergy. 19% of their possessions are in transition. Like, they're just,
yeah,
you know. And then it's like 18% in spot up. Like, they're kind of running. It's not necessarily 7 seconds or less. It's just kind of go.
Yeah.
And you talk about, like, that's what coaches are always harping on: be aggressive. Because if you're just aggressive, if you just constantly attack, if you're a bad team, that's the best way for you to get by.
Yeah.
Like, trying to be like a plotting, deliberate team that really takes its time to execute. Like, if you guys aren't good, then why are you doing that? Because you're going to be sloppy, and you're just going to, like, it's not going to work. So just go, just run at the rim, go do it.
And it's why you see so many sound bites from coaches where it's, you know, get the ball and pass it or shoot it or drive it, but do something with it. Don't just stop and let the defense set up. Like, it's just so important to keep moving constantly to keep the defense kind of off balance.
So, I mean, you know, a huge win for them. Not a bad loss for Milwaukee. You know, they had a lead. They had a good shot at it. They just couldn't get it done. Like, Monte just, you know, kind of ran out of steam, and Brandon Jennings had a bad game, and, you know, he's had a good season, just had a bad game.
And Ersan Ilyasova continues to...
I don't know. I'm so frustrated. I don't understand it.
Obviously, his shooting is down. And I'm not even talking about three-point shooting, just any kind of shooting. His shooting is down. Considerably, but you take away the last 2 months of last season, and his numbers outside of that, at least per 36, are not that far off from what he showed the rest of his career so far.
But my problem is, like, I saw, like, what he was capable of last year. I saw that in the year before. Like,
yeah.
I watched him and was like, wow, this guy's really talented. Like, this guy's got a lot of versatility. This guy could be really good. And then he exploded last year, and I was like, okay, like, a guy. And then for him to start, like, and I don't want to bury him because I said this yesterday about Roy Hibbert, and the Pacer Bulldogs guy picked it up. I was like, I feel better about Roy Hibbert based off of how bad he's been because I know he's not that bad.
Right.
Like, he's just not. And that's where I'm at with Ilyasova. I'm just like, he is not that bad. I think he could be mediocre. Like, if he was mediocre, I would be less surprised. But I can't look at this and be like, yes, he is quantifiably that terrible. That makes no sense.
Yeah. No, I mean, he definitely should not be this bad. But when you shoot 52% over 2 months, the final 2 months before your contract year, shoot 52% from three, maybe you shouldn't be regarded as this, like, all-around player who can do so much. Like, he's kind of a garbage guy in the sense that he'll mix it up for rebounds, get in there, get some easy putbacks, and he can shoot a jumper here and there. But, you know, it is early. He could figure it all out. But at least right now, it looks like those 2 months weren't a complete outlier.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to wait. I want to wait. I want to give him till MLK. On MLK, I'll you know, throw the book in.
I think we should just give him until tomorrow. If he can't raise his percentage to 50% on the year tomorrow, he's done.
Tomorrow, he's done.
He should be cut.
Yeah, our power rankings are going to be up today, and I heard about the whole thing was about how we're still peeling potatoes is the first line. Like, we're still making the meal. And you can tell whether the ingredients are good or bad. You got an idea of whether this meal is going to come together or it's going to be a disaster. But, you know, like, you could see whether the ingredients are bad or not. Like, the Kings, you could just tell, like, the ingredients are the same ingredients they've been.
You made a comment to me last night that you don't understand Matt Barnes. The Clippers get a good road win in San Antonio. Matt Barnes is a huge part of that. Played 35 minutes off the bench, had like 14-9, shot well. What don't you understand about Matt Barnes?
So he was on that We Believe team, and I really liked him. You know, he was a big, versatile guy that could hit threes and played really scrappy, hard-nosed defense. And then he went, I think, to Phoenix, and he was more of a garbage-time guy that really didn't contribute a whole lot. And he's bounced around from team to team to team. And on the Lakers, he was terrible defensively and couldn't hit anything. And then every time I start to get a lock on who he is, he becomes the entirely other person.
Yeah.
Like, it's like trying to date somebody with multiple personality disorder. Like, I don't understand what's going on because, like, you show up at the restaurant and he's wearing a top hat. And then, you know, you go to a movie and he screams, throws his cup at the screen and walks out. Like, who is this guy? Like, what is happening?
You know what the problem is? Is that bad players are inconsistent.
Yeah, and that's a large part of it, I think. But he's still – I also will say this, though. Great teams can put bad players in certain positions and they'll succeed. They'll excel.
Oh, like, sure.
You know, and that's what we're saying with Barnes.
We just had a 10-minute discussion about Trevor Ariza.
Right. Like, that's what we're saying. Like, is you know, if you put guys in the right position, they'll really contribute. Like, Ronny Turioff last night was huge for them down the stretch. Like, Barnes carried him for a lot of the game, and then Turioff took him home. How many times are we going to say that this year? Like, that's crazy. I have a question. Do you like the fact that Del Negro takes Jordan out almost every single fourth quarter of a meaningful game?
I don't. I get it, and they're at a weird crossroads right now where they're too good to be developing players, but they're not good enough to where, you know, they can't experiment a little bit. It's this weird middle ground. And I think if DeAndre Jordan is going to be your center, he needs to be allowed to earn some fourth quarter minutes. And I think his play this year so far, he has earned those minutes. And yeah, you can be worried about free throw shooting, but just if they're going to start doing the hack of DeAndre Jordan, then just take him out. Like, why preemptively do that? I say get him some minutes, let him be a defensive force, and if they start doing that, then you counter their strategy by taking that away. I mean, I know that's going to involve some real time analyzing by Del Negro, but maybe just look over it. Maybe just make a deal with Chris Paul and say, hey, tell me when to take this guy out.
This Clippers team, they don't need anybody except Chris Paul because they've got so much depth and versatility. Caron Butler played 9 minutes last night.
Yeah.
Like, and typically in that situation, like last year, it would have been, well, Billups or whoever else was filling in had to have had a big game. Like Nick Young had to have had a big – Randy Foy had to have had a big game. You know, Willie Green, your favorite guy, was one of four, played, you know, 17 minutes, 3 rebounds, no assists, -7 on the floor.
I'm shocked by that.
Crawford, though, steps in, and then they played. I was so pleased because they played the Bledsoe Paul dual point guard combo down the stretch, and it worked out really well because Bledsoe just absolutely crashed the glass and got that tip in.
Yeah, and you can do. I think part of that's matchup. You can do that against San Antonio because they are such a weird team in terms of they have Duncan, they have Parker, and then they have a bunch of wing players to stretch the floor. You know, it obviously Manu's in there for ball handling purposes and to create, but for the most part, you're throwing shooters out there, and you can just throw Bledsoe on the ball handler or on a shooter, and he's going to be perfectly fine defensively.
Like, they just, there's nobody on that team that they need other than Paul. That's the only guy that they have to have to succeed and to win against big teams. That's nuts. I mean, that's just crazy that they've got this much versatility and depth. And
he is good.
You know, it's
Chris
it's,
Paul is a fine basketball player.
Oh man, do you think that was an offensive foul on when he got Parker?
No, absolutely not. And you know, Spurs fans crying about the foul. There's actually the first part of that play before the alleged push off by Paul was Parker raking his hand across Paul's neck. So it's like, well, if you want to call the first foul on the play, then that's on Tony Parker. And after that, I didn't think it was a flop. I just thought it was a non-call. Like, I don't think there was a foul on Parker on the contact before he takes the shot. I didn't think there was a foul on Chris Paul.
They
you can't complain that the refs need to let them play all the time, and then when they let them play, say, oh, well, that was a foul.
Sure you can. That is the entirety of being a fan. Like the quintessential experience of being a fan. Real quick for San Antonio, Steven Jackson's now out. He broke his finger.
Yeah, that sucks.
He's out for I think 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Kawhi Leonard's out two weeks at least. So this team that we kind of talked about being so versatile and having so much depth, Diaz having a rough year. Gary Neal is having a rough year. Like, you know, there's all these teams, all these guys are kind of, you know, Dewan Blair is starting, but he, you know, they're trying to give him minutes and he's not working out. Splitter, they kind of, Spurs fans don't understand why Splitter doesn't play more. And I will tell you the answer is because defensively he's a nightmare.
Ooh,
like,
yeah.
He's just bad. They are not really as deep as we thought they were. Now, I don't want to overreact to a couple of losses because the Spurs are still really great and their system's going to carry them. But I could definitely see them kind of coming back to earth for at least the next 2 months or so and then kicking it up after the rodeo road trip and getting it into high gear later in the year.
there are certain people that seem to want to think that Manu Ginobili is done. I don't buy it. I think the guy's just way too good. He had a long off season when you factor in the Olympics, and I think it may take him a little bit just to get his legs under him. And it wouldn't shock me if in the next couple of weeks Manu goes on a tear, Danny Green starts playing better because of, you know, Manu's ability to create for other players and really get them involved in spots that make them, you know, weapons. And I could see them totally surviving this stretch without Jackson, without Kawhi. And when they work those guys back in, Manu is clicking like he usually does, and they're a force again. I just don't buy that Manu is too old.
Done at all, but I will say, I almost wonder, well, there's two things. One, I think I don't want to bag on Parker too much because I really thought he was overrated last year. I didn't see his impact in terms of people talking about him being an MVP candidate. I thought that was absurd when you compared him to some of the other candidates.
Oh, I disagree.
But he's had a rough start, but I'm not going to, like, he had, like, the eye injury, I really want to, you know, that was severe. Like, that was a serious thing. And, like, I don't want to, I want to give him time and be patient with him. I do wonder, though, a little bit if sometimes they try too hard to get everybody involved. If there are times when they need to recognize that, you know, for whatever reason, the system, like, because last night part of it was they kept looking for their usual, we're going to rotate the ball and make all the right passes and play the right way. And the problem was, and I love that, that's what I want teams to do, but the Clippers sniffed it out. Like, they had their rotations in place before the ball got there. And you can tell the Spurs were surprised because that's not what's supposed to happen. Like,
right.
They're supposed to be open. And then they were like, okay. And then what you have is you have guys that aren't going to be able to create on their own, trying to create on their own. And the ball's got to get back to Parker or Ginobili in that situation.
Yeah, I actually would have liked to see just more pounding into Tim Duncan and getting him involved. I mean, he had a good night, and he did get up 16 shots and went to the free throw line a bunch of times. But I think especially he has a huge matchup advantage against the Clippers. And I just would have, I mean, I'm not going to second guess Pop. I'm just saying from what I was watching, I really wanted him to get the ball more down the stretch.
20 points, 14 rebounds, 2 blocks in 35 minutes last night.
Yeah.
You know, somebody, Aaron McGuire, mentioned that last night, that despite everything, Pop did not play him over 35 minutes. And that's, you know, always looking big picture.
Yeah. Which is the right thing, you know.
You know who doesn't look big picture?
Hmm.
Dwight Howard.
Oh, boy. Did Dwight say things again?
Dwight said things again.
He does
so he
that.
And Darren are having a little tiff over very quick. And it seems like the media seems to kind of caught off guard by it, where it's like, I wasn't really at, like, Dwight said something about, well, if he's mad, then that's fine. I had to do for me about leaving and not going to Brooklyn. And you can tell the reporters are kind of like, didn't really ask if you were mad.
Like, well, and it's like, you didn't have a choice to go to Brooklyn. You tried to go to Brooklyn. It didn't work.
Yeah.
I don't think Dwight actually knows what's going on.
And then, you know, Darren has kind of made some comments about how basically, like, he blamed the Magic because he was like, well, they weren't going to trade him to us. They weren't going to trade him to us.
Right.
Which is true because their package was horrible. And I could hear everyone saying, but what the Magic got was terrible. I will still take the crap platter that they got over having to pay Brook Lopez that much money over that many years with no other talent on a team. Like, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
You cannot take that contract. You simply cannot take that contract. If you're a rebuilding team. Like, I think Brook Lopez is having a good year. I've been really impressed with his play. Like, I don't care that the defense and rebounding isn't terrific. I don't care. Like, he's been great. I think Brook Lopez is having a good year. You still, if you're the Magic, you can't take on that contract. But the other thing is Darren kind of hinted basically that it's the fact that he waffled so much. And Chris Paul's kind of made the same comments. There's a report about how Paul's upset with him for being on the fence and not making a decision. And this is what it comes down to, is like, he's really tried to spin in the last couple of months that, like, oh, it was just a hard situation for everybody. No, man, it was a hard situation that you made for everyone.
Yeah. And that's the problem, is that the nature of the business is difficult. It is hard to get those things done. But when you are, when you're submarining every effort by being the one with the majority of the say in the situation, which he is. I mean, the Stars can say, hey, I'm not going to sign there. I'm not going to re-sign there. And that kills the deal. for the most part. It usually kills the deal.
And the agent. I mean, his agent leaked stuff constantly.
Oh, my God. And to pretend that, oh, my God, this is just so tricky to figure out. No, you're the trick. Like, you're the problem. You're the thing that's going wrong here. If you're the type of person, I mean, I've known these people throughout the majority of my life where they're just like, oh, I have such a problem with this boss. They're just so rude and so incompetent and so mean. And then they go to a new job and it's like, oh, I have such a problem with this boss. They're the worst. And then they go to another job. Oh, I have a problem. It's like, no, there is one constant in this situation and it's you.
Yep.
And that's with Dwight. Dwight is the problem. Now, it's fine. He's talented enough to probably make up for it and he'll eventually get what he wants because that's usually what happens with stars in the NBA and it's just the business. But to come out there and publicly pretend like, you know, things just didn't work out. Oh, shucks, maybe next time. Like, no, you were the problem, and everyone knows it. And if he would just admit it, people will probably like him a lot more. And the interesting thing is he still has a chance to team up with Chris Paul this summer.
Yeah.
And he really does. Like, things can happen. It wouldn't shock me if Dallas figured out a way to bring it all together. You know, Atlanta will have the cap space. Maybe those baby Bobcats will have the cap space. I bet Dwight is dying to get to Charlotte. You know, a lot could happen to where those two could end up on the same team again, and or for the first time, and it would kind of make a lot of these comments super awkward heading into next year. But by the time they started playing together, nobody would care.
Great point about how you know, if you keep having a problem repetitively, eventually you gotta realize you're the problem. Only three games tonight. We got a light slate, and Philadelphia. Let's go through them real quick. Philadelphia is giving 5.5 to Toronto. I actually like Toronto in this game just because I think Philadelphia has been lagging. I think the Sixers will probably win, but I do like the Raptors to cover. I just think they'll be close. I think the Raptors have a good chance to win this game. Even with all the injuries and all the problems that they've had, they haven't been good. But, you know, DeMar DeRozan's been doing there's been some positive signs. I'm not freaking out over it like a lot of Raptors fans and media are. I think it's a little early for that, Holly. But I think that there's time. There are some good signs there.
Yeah, for the most part, he's looked decent. I've never been a DeRozan guy. And I even wrote that once he got that contract extension, I and many others were like, what the hell? Why would you give him that money? Now, he hasn't already earned that money, but he looks like he's improving for the most part.
And we should definitely talk about that some other time, about guys like developing into those contracts and kind of, and that's why I'm worried about with Ilyasova, because it's like there's been more of a thing of guys talking about, I want to earn this contract I've been given, which is refreshing to see, honestly.
Yeah. Roy Hibbert basically said those things to me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and a great piece that you had with him. The Knicks are giving 6 to New Orleans on the road. I don't think the Knicks have any problem covering this game. I've been looking at a lot of the quote unquote data, a lot of the stats, and it looks like New York's regressing, especially offensively. But I think that they're going to keep winning because of the schedule. I think they're okay for this game.
And their defense is still probably going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
So you can outlast those regressions on offense.
Yeah, so, Robin Lopez isn't going to be able to get much going against Tyson Chandler,
Which is the marquee matchup of the night.
Right.
How about this? The brow on Carmelo tonight. That's going to be interesting.
That's weird. Oh, that's just weird. I don't like that.
I love it. It's going to be all kinds of gangly against all kinds of, jab steps.
Yeah, you might want to play Ryan Anderson in that spot and watch him and give him Melo, which is not a great matchup, but there's not really one.
And then the game of the night, fan night, Nets at Lakers.
The over-under is 208.
Oof, I got to go up over on that.
I did. I went over. I think it's going to be 120-115 at least. I think it could be. This thing goes to overtime. This thing could stretch to 140. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah, like, I mean, you've got the Lakers looking a lot better on offense, and the Nets don't play a lot of the defense.
And neither do the Lakers.
Like, yeah.
Neither team plays defense, and both teams have great offenses, and they're fast paced teams. Like, this is gonna be fantastic. I'm so excited for this. I only wish Nash was playing. If Nash was playing, it would be just terrific. But I think it's gonna be a lot of fun. You got even without Nash, you got Kobe versus Darren, and you've got Meta World Peace and Crash Wallace. Gerald Wallace should be back tonight, so you got that matchup. You got Dwight Howard versus Brook Lopez. You got Chris Humphries versus Pau Gasol. This is gonna be fascinating.
And here's my final prediction that I want you to make. Here's the over under. 0.5 games that Mike D'Antoni coaches tonight. What do you got? Over under.
Somebody mentioned the other day that they think that he and Nash want to start together, but I think he knows he's got to get on the floor, and he's got to, because like they can't really wait, and it's not fair to Bickerstaff to have him keep going out there.
And you cannot let Bickerstaff win that job from him, because I'm pretty sure Jim Buss thinks it's a game show right now.
I'll say he coaches, and which will inevitably mean he won't. But I'll say he coaches. I'll go the over.
I'm going under.
I think he holds out?
Yeah, I think he holds out. I think he's holding out for more money. Just to really make this a circus.
We can only hope. Thanks, Zach.
All right, thanks, Matt.